Okay, we're going to get started now. It's just after 7 o'clock. Boy, what a difficult road we have before us. Is Simon on? No? Okay. And I don't know, Lupe sometimes is able to sign in by, she calls in, but she stays on mute. So I'm not sure if she's in. But the more I get into this material, the more I realize how much I don't know. I don't know the data. I don't know the information, nor how to help all of us proceed to get to the next level here. What we're doing is we're spending time together. Is Tianjo on? Okay. Silverdale's traveling, and I'm glad that he came on. Thank you, Silverdale. But nevertheless, we proceed. It's what a feeling of the first thing that emerges in me, of course, is this feeling of I don't know, therefore I shouldn't proceed or shouldn't go ahead. But I think now is the time to proceed in spite of what I don't know, and let's just see what can happen, what this effort together brings forth so that we can help all of us together grab a little more information so that we can aid in the work we're doing together and aid in our individual work. A lot of this material comes down to individual work. And remember, if you go on the website, which I don't think there's been many postings, but if you go on the website, we start with the idea of prayer and pray without ceasing from Thessalonians. And that's part of what we're trying to accomplish here. We're still on chapter 11, by the way, and we're on part 2 of chapter 11. This will be our final part of chapter 11 before we move on to 12. But they're clearly interrelated. They're interrelated. And the key in a sense is not always just the data. The key is the practice.
Yeah, sure.
The key is the practice. I'm
going
to read something from chapter 11, but this is from Secret Talks, volume 9, Ivan. Is that available?
No, Jay wants to edit that. He wants to
produce
a new edition.
Well, this is chapter 11 from that Secret Talks. I know that Silverdale has a copy. I happen to have a set as well. And it's called The Reason for Daily Invocation. I'm just going to read the first few paragraphs. And it opens by saying, the passage of the presence of an angel has an effect on the invocation chamber, G said. Its passage through the chamber produces a transformational effect as if its presence were radiation. The transformational effect is like exposure to radiation in the sense that the organic body compensates for the exposure by forming antibodies. It provokes an actual physical and chemical composition in the biological self. So only when we are preparing ourselves for these chambers can something begin to happen. It cannot happen. I don't want to say it can't happen accidentally, but it can happen accidentally, but let's just say that the percentage of accidents occur go up when you're more attuned to it, all right? It's the more attuned to it you are and the more you are sensitive to invocation, the more it will work for you. We're caught in our daily lives so tremendously that we forget this practice of what's called the reason for daily invocation. But even that can't become mechanical. Once you get to a certain level of the invocational state, it is by its nature, it cannot be mechanical. All right?
Right.
It just cannot. And I want to point that out, that it can't be... because that's in those areas is where there's this spark of creativity. That's the... It's like you're touching base with chaos at that moment. You're edging up to it. You're edging up to a certain part of it to the extent that you're capable of doing that. So that's where we are in this book now. We're starting to talk about making the prayer absolute part of our everyday life. All right? And all of these things are cyclic. They are, how can we produce something that has everlasting effect on us? At some point, everything else will become secondary to this particular kind of work we're doing. You have to watch, you have to keep a watch out for the angelic presence. You don't know when it will come, but when it comes in a certain way, you must seize it. You must seize the angelic presence. Because when it's there, that's the time to go and grab it. Because you must, from time to time, you must invite the opportunity to wrestle with the angel. Other times you don't have the choice. It wrestles with you. So we have that before us here because we are working on our invocational skills. And our invocational skills are what? That's where we are at this point. Anyway, I guess what's the first thing that's in my mind now, and Ivan, you can correct me or whatever, but it's just like, did somebody have a chance to work with this material during the weekend, during the last week? And do you have questions? Do questions come up for you? What is it that is sparked, if anything, in by this in your work? Sometimes we look for spectacular signs, you know, oddities, something incredible to occur. This is incredible. I tell you that when I am in this space, when we are in this space, it is, it's a font of creativity that is just pouring out. It's this, for me, I call it the being on the seat of wonder. So as we can perfect that, all that's going to occur is we go from this level to the next level, the spiral, and it continues to cycle in that manner. And this prayer is one form of that cycling.
Is this something that you think we would do actually together as a group?
Is this something we would do? And then what was the last part of what you said, Susan?
Together as a group?
Yes, absolutely.
Because, I mean, for me, I can read it and intellectualize about it, but it doesn't have a lot of, I don't know, I'd rather experience it.
Okay. Well, that's what I'm talking about, and I don't know if Simon got back on at all.
I don't see him online.
That was a question that, and this really reflects back a few weeks to what Pathworld was saying, that, well, what are you talking about here?
Yeah, this is, maybe Susan, you sound a little like, you probably feel the way that I feel. I mean, every time that I come on to upon this formula, you know, in this exercise, what I get is that I realize my ignorance, like David was saying, like I don't feel like I have the data, or it's, I don't have it, certainly don't have it intellectually, and I'm not sure that I have it experientially, and so on. So this is, I think this is an area where it's necessary to plunge into it. It's necessary to practice, to experiment in order to have data, is what it is. And I mean, I have experimented at length with this formula here, and you know, I would say my personal experiment was inconclusive. I had some experiences that I still remember, and that I had a lot of, I don't know, what I call it, I had a lot of downtime or like sort of monotonous attempts at doing something.
That's okay.
And, you know, so I still find that my biggest issue with a practice like this is setting myself any kind of timeline, any discipline to do it, like any pattern of repeating practice or any, you know, entryway, having a commitment or an understanding with myself, a contract with myself, that I'm going to do this experiment. But, you know, what really caught my attention this time reading this chapter, which I never noticed before, and it's partly because we had this Para-Absolute workshop here that Kelly carried out, and EJ made a very strong contribution to it one afternoon there, I believe, or one morning. And, you know, there's a passage in here that says, it's basically like, he gives you this formula, first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth. So this is a pattern for doing this practice. But what he gets around to saying is, on page 113, you will soon find your own way to pass through each of these steps. Let others find their own way. Each person must arrive at it spontaneously. So somehow that I overlooked that, you know, that never got my attention before. But, you know, my response to that now is that, oh yeah, this is what EJ's talking about when he says, for one person, Prayer Absolute looks like doing theater, and for another person, Prayer Absolute looks like sorting pennies, and for another person, Prayer Absolute looks like playing music with a group of other people, and so on. And you know, for me, Prayer Absolute might look like writing fantasy stories, you know, having an encapsulated space where I sit at a desk and I exercise my imagination in a certain way. So that doesn't mean that it isn't necessary, or let's say it isn't valuable, to have the experience of going through this very strict pattern,
right,
going through it step by step. And I'm not sure if I understood Susan's question. You know, I'm not sure that we could do this exercise in a group. I mean, we could attempt it. You know, we could sit here.
Yeah.
We could pull the image up and let everybody look at, have everybody
I'm
look
not
at
sure
it.
That's what Susan's question
yeah.
is, but we could.
But it seems like the project here, or what EJ seems to be projecting in this chapter, is that you have to do your scales. You know, you have to do your novice work. You have to do the beginner work. And then at some point you find out, oh, this is how I upscale from, I go from 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 and so on, and it's going to be in my own way.
In my own way.
But it seems too easy.
Go ahead, Susan.
It seems too easy. There must be something wrong.
Well, let's see if there is something wrong. And let's focus a little bit more. What is it? And I'm asking Susan the question, but this is a question that others have had too, and I I think I may be sharing what Pathworld had asked a few weeks ago. So you say you read the chapter and you get it intellectually, but it's just intellectual.
So I guess now it's time to do it, because I'll never know till then.
Okay. So what do you mean, and I'm asking it universally too. I'm asking it online as well, but for Susan, I'm asking, what does it mean for you to do it?
Well, I think initially I would probably actually sit. I have a space where I meditate, and with or without an object, focus my attention and of the man on the cross and try to be with that, whatever that is.
What happens when you do that then? You say, try to be with that.
Well, it's a feeling of kind of, it's almost a physical feeling of coming out of your chest and then reversing and looking back.
Would anybody else be able to describe? So what does doing it mean for you? When you say, it seems like I'm doing it, or then I try to do it.
There's something from Jim H. I'm not sure if it was before this or...
Go for it, yeah.
It says you have to really feel the different moods. Pity, yearning, ignorance, communion. They may require props to evoke. Postures, music, art, etc.
Okay, so Jim is saying that there's a sensation of a type of feeling. Maybe for him he's saying that there's a feeling modality that occurs here. Mm-hmm. Like an energetic modality, would you say? That there's an energetic? Is there a change? Would you say there's a change in your energetics, Susan?
Yes, like a calming, but deepen and calm.
Okay. Okay, go ahead and read the feedback from people online, please.
As it comes, I will, certainly.
I think there is some now.
I do have Winnipeg 9.
Good.
It says, focused attention... INT.
Focused attention. What does it feel like to you, Winnipeg 9? That's probably Mark, right? Go ahead, Susan.
That's all I got so far.
There's just that one comment? Mark, but there's a comment from Mark Roche earlier that where he says that the formulation is beyond me makes him feel a bit at sea. What I'm trying to get to, I guess, and this is where I think I feel so difficult in sharing it, not in sensing it myself, is there a sense when you can say, yes, that is a sense of presence of the higher that is occurring right now. Do you have a sensation where for you, you have a bit of certainty? I'm not going to say all the way certainty, but at least a bit of certainty. Let me ask here.
Yes.
Do you, ladies in the back, Jana. Yeah, when you got the question, right, Dan? So the question is, when you're in those spaces, is there a clear and distinct sense of presence that you can point to that is clear and distinct for you? Well, that's
what Shanna says. It's the pointing to.
That's not the answer, then.
Okay.
But can you point? Does it? Can? Is there a state that you can refer to? You say, yes, that's. Good. Repeat that.
So it's like you're the experience where you're getting warmer, warmer, colder, colder, warmer, colder.
Yeah.
Like the game that children play. Yeah.
But you know when you're there.
Well, when somebody gets close to it,
you think. So what I'm saying is that, so you know you're getting closer. Or further. M.A.?
Indicators.
Indicators. And then I wanted to point out the last chapter I read, where he asked to take on particular postures and to associate with his meditation. That's a way that you could actually use prayer absolutely.
Yeah, I don't want to go there yet, right?
Yeah.
That's what I want to ask. I'm asking the question, do you have a clear and distinct something that you say, I am getting warmer?
Sure. Yeah, I do. I would say yes.
Listen to that. And listen to the tonality of that. There's a kind of a sense of certainty. Dan? Not really? So Dan says,
I've never been able to come to it on my own, but I know when it's there.
I know when it's there.
Sometimes I'm not in a mood to do anything, and you set out to get a change of mood by just starting.
Sometimes you can get a change of mood by just starting. You're not in the mood to do something, but you take on a posture. This is what the chapter that MA is talking about from the visions in the stone. See, let me go back, David. Let me try to reformulate. Actually, I'm going to try to be more clear about what I was saying. At one time, when I was living in Tucson, Arizona, I got very serious about this exercise, the formulaic version of prayer absolute. So I set myself the task that I would, every morning in a space that I set aside, a small altar space, that I would carry out this prayer. And I wanted to do it. I didn't understand it at that time either, and I wanted to do it as an experiment. And what I intended to do, or what I set out to do, was to carry out that formula to the best of my ability and to see if what David is talking about happened, if I experienced any change in my state, right? If I felt that I could get more in contact with this perspective of the absolute by doing that exercise. And, you know, what can I say? I did it. I did it every morning for a year. And my assessment of that was that it was, what I was doing was very repetitive, and it had, and I think a lot of times I did it mechanically, or because I was repeating something,
okay.
I got into a pattern of repetition, and it was fairly kind of rote. In other words, it's like saying, like, I memorized the Lord's Prayer. I memorized this prayer. I did this prayer every morning. Now, in the course of 365 days, I would say that two or three times, something very unexpected happened, and I can't even describe to you what, you know, there was, I felt like I contacted something different than my ordinary experience. And, you know, could I make that happen? It's like what Dan is saying. I think I couldn't really figure out. I couldn't make something happen every time I used this formula. And I couldn't say that I upscale, you know, that I did it so many times that I became an adept, and then now I could change my perspective or get in touch with the absolute by doing it. But basically, that was my, I was satisfied at the end of an entire year that I had carried out that experiment, and that in fact, that it, you know, let's say at a beginner level, I demonstrated to myself that I could contact the other, that in the circumstance that things were aligned, that I was open enough, that I was not being too mental, or that I wasn't just being mechanical, that something very unusual was brought in, you know, that I was invoking something, that's all.
Okay, so I don't want to let you off the hook, Ivan. And Susan, you're in the frying pan, too.
We have comments here.
I'll bet.
From others as well.
Simon's on, okay.
Actually, let me just finish, say one more thing, David. The fact is that this was, at that time, as a novice, okay, in reading this Ideas of EJ, and you know, I was maybe part of a study circle in Tucson at that time. I mean, I was carrying that out to the best of my understanding at that time.
I understand that, but then you said you had these unusual experiences, and sometimes some invocation would occur, but, and then I happen to know later, Ivan, when you actually moved here, you were involved in situations where there were, I would say, clear and distinct, powerful invocations.
Right.
Okay?
Sure.
What I'm trying to get, and a lot of this is because of questions that Pat Wilb and Simon have raised, but also what I'm trying to get is, would you say that you have an objective measuring stick internally for you that recognizes that objective invocational space if it passed you on the street?
Yes, I think that comes from time and grade.
That's what I'm looking for. That's what I'm looking for, is that for me, and for me, it's a clear and distinct vibratory sensation that is energetic in nature, but it has a, and I think Jim H. used the term mood, it has a very clear and distinct tonality to it. For me, it also happens to have a scent, okay? It's like if I don't get it vibrationally, sometimes I'll smell something, my head will just turn, and then I'll see something that kicks that in, and I know that there's a pathway there. Do we have a common ground, is what I'm looking for. Do we have a common ground experientially to move forward on? Susan, and if you would you like to read some of those comments, please?
Yeah,
sure. I would like to say, first off, for me, it's vibratory. And I can sense when I'm there, and a lot of times I'll notice it like a tree that just stands out. Somehow colors become crisper, and you notice things that you didn't notice before. So that's,
I'm gonna, Susan, may I share a couple of things that happened in an experience that you and I have had?
Okay.
Susan will call me from time to time, and I call her from time to time. We've had some extraordinary experiences on the phone, And sometimes, for me, there's no, you enter this vibratory space that's very intense, and it has a radiational effect to it. All right? All I'm doing is continuing to point to this. And there have been a number of times when suddenly she'll say, "What happened?" Do you remember that?
I do.
She'll say, "What happened?" What was she saying there is my question.
That space got blown.
What does that mean?
I don't know, but it was just like, wait a minute, what?
So we said, what did she say?
She got blown.
The space was blown.
The point I'm trying to make is that for her, during those moments, it was clear and distinct. All right?
So it was like clearly in the moment of resonating, and then something, you know, I had a weird thought or...
Doesn't matter what,
but
that's the tool I'm trying to get to for all of us, okay? Mm-hmm. That's the tool I'm trying to find when you just know that it's off or on, or as Jana was telling us, it's getting hotter, you're getting warmer and warmer. Sometimes it's bloody hot. Okay.
Okay,
you
ready for some comments?
Ready.
Okay, so Adulsum says, "I feel sometimes as if I'm a key in a lock, or I am gently encased. I must be still and quiet."
I
must be
still and quiet.
I must be still and quiet.
And that's a whole other thing, be still and quiet. And I think, I don't know how it's pronounced, that Lusum, or it's beyond me, but... Have you not brought that up before, being the key in a lock? I believe you have brought that up before. It might be worth your while, and you're welcome to either write it on the website or share it more directly with me or others. But that may be a critical post for you. Do you remember in Chapter 10 we were talking about posts,
mm-hmm.
accepting a post?
Yeah, in it. An angelic post.
And some angelic post. What does that mean? That means something clear and distinct for her. A key in a lock, right?
Mm-hmm.
Think about that a lot. Go ahead, Susan.
Okay, Mark Roach said, "Yes, I feel like it's getting a little warmer."
Good. Mark, I happen to know, is an experienced voyager, and he is able in those hot spaces to go there and voyage. So I know he has the tools. I know it by direct observation of this individual. And one element of it is it does get hotter. There's actually a physical heat to it. Would we not agree that that's sometimes the case? Sometimes that's the case?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, pardon? Or cold. Or cold, too, another person in the room says, because that might be an element of it that sweeps through at some moment. Go ahead, Susan.
Well, let's see. Past World said, "Yes, sometimes I just know."
And what I'm trying to establish here, that's sufficient unto itself, okay? Because I'm not trying to tell, I'm not trying to come up with like what works for, what's a good description for everybody on the planet, but I'm trying for each person to declare internally that I just know. And you carry that little suitcase of certainty, how small it is, at least you carry it.
This reminds me of why we named our newsletter at one time for the Institute the One-Eyed Journal, because in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is the guide.
And so
this is like we're, yeah, this is what I...
We have a little bit of...
Figure something out.
We can see a little bit together, and together we can see more, can't we? Isn't that what's happening here week after week? Go ahead, Susan.
Okay, so Jim H. says, at this stage, it requires faith if it has not been personally experienced.
Maybe. I think that EJ recommends against faith.
Yeah, I question that too, Jim, because first of all, I've seen some of your postings and some of the things that you tend to read, and I would say that you've experienced this directly. We understand what level 10 is, right? Level 10 is all the way. We know that we may not be all the way. But even if we're not all the way, maybe we're a 2. But it's something. And I think part of the exercise in this chapter is to grasp that and allow ourselves to go wherever we are at this stage, as Jim H. says, that's okay. But, and I think it was M.A. that was saying earlier, she just says, you just start, right?
Start.
Just start.
Start.
All right. If I'm a,
go ahead.
On? Okay. So Mark Roach goes on. He says, it did just pass me on the street. I was late because I had to walk to the store and get water. I'm in a weird space today because a lot of physical pain. So I'm moving slow and quite spaced out and vulnerable. Yet I had about 5 real impactful, heartful interactions with different people in about 15 minutes. I attributed it to working on all this higher stuff and somehow being open to the higher space.
Working on all this higher stuff. I love it.
And then he goes on to say, despite the pain I was in, it was like being on a sort of magic carpet ride.
You were on a magic carpet ride, Mark, and I'll tell you my take on it, because I was just, as in January, I was in extreme physical stress. The magic carpet ride is the vulnerability that occurs when you're in that place, and then allowing yourself to be in vulnerability, and then you are literally, you're more open and possibly able to be penetrated.
And that's what he says. Simon commented, and Mark said that he agrees with Simon, the vulnerability was an opening of sorts.
Okay, so now I don't know how many times I've said these things. I wish that I had the memory to recapture them, but one more element on our toolkit is this idea of surrender and vulnerability. But it's very delicate. I do not mean giving up at all. I mean proceeding in the face of the unknown, like I felt at the beginning of this class, utterly unable to proceed, quite frankly. So that was very good, Simon. That might help with when we do our summary for the next chapter too.
Well, and I can agree. Sometimes when you're the most weirded out physically, you're just so open to something else.
Okay, and when we talk about, when we get a more of a sense of these chambers that we're talking about, as Susan is saying, really weirded out, whatever that means, doesn't matter, really. Sometimes that creates an openness to a door that wasn't there before. Literally, if our eyes were more clear and we were more able to accept ourselves in these spaces, we could see the doors. And they appear almost like a physical door. I'm looking across the room and I see a couple of doors. But when I'm in those spaces sometimes, and I've been in those spaces, many a times, I'm thinking of one specific right now, where I could see the door, and I went through the door. I don't know if it was a good idea, but I did. Okay, because that's just how this one works. It just happens to do that.
Fools rush in where angels fear to tread.
Absolutely, and that really...
I always like that saying. I always like that saying.
Somebody had to, and I did from time to time. Go ahead.
I was just going to go back to that statement about, you know, I don't know if I understood you, Jim, what you said about faith, but again, like going back to my, you know, particular novice experience with prayer absolute, I would say that I actually was driven by a kind of like determination or persistence. It's like I didn't actually have any faith that anything was going to happen, but I had somewhat arbitrarily set myself a task, a practice to do, and I would do it repetitively, and I was determined to do it. And so I guess, like in a sense for me, it was a way of getting around a lot of mental blocks, mental obstacles, you know, intellectualizations and body, you know, body obstacles like machine, what would you call it, machine fog and obscurities and so on. It's like basically if you say to yourself, every time I go through a doorway, I'm going to do this exercise, or every time I hear such and such, this is going to be my practice and so on. It's like my experience with that has been, you know, that some of those have been some of my favorite exercises or projects, let's say, that have come from EJ, which is, you know, ways to cut through whatever are the complications that your personality puts up, you know, your machine. You just, by saying, I'm going to do this, and this is how I'm going to do it, and that's it, you just cut through a lot of mechanicalness. Anyway.
I want to go back to what Mark had to say, you know, it passed him on the street or something like that. Sometimes if our eyes are more open, we will catch, there'll be something there that you're supposed to do or catch.
Yeah.
All right?
Signs, yeah, signs and significances and so on.
So perfecting your ability to see those signs is important. Sometimes the sign is you got to leave the space. Sometimes the sign is go talk to that person with the yellow purse or something. Who knows what it is? Or a storekeeper, or you just need to go in and buy something that you don't need, but you're supposed to. That's something that I've talked to about with some individuals about experimenting with going out to do that. That is kind of like, I call that Bardo walking, where we go into the space, but we hold ourselves in the Bardo space first and foremost and look around. And look around. What is there to see? What is there to do? And how is there to be at that time? Similar to that.
Similar to the Just Because Club.
Yeah.
Dance.
Yeah. But this is like with two or three individuals, you go out and you work with being in the prayer absolute, maybe even work with the prayer when you get going. And your eyes, you're seeing a different world. You really are. I loved selling the jewelry. I just really liked being in the booth selling the jewelry. Not so much because I like to sell or because I like jewelry, but it was such an interaction that you would have, because the nature of the jewelry, ancient jewelry, that EJ and Linda devised were just, it put people in a different mood when they came in. It was different. But that's yet another story. Where are we? Anything else, Susan?
Yes, there is more.
Thank you.
Mark Roach said it was interesting because it made it easier for both others to access me and for me to access them.
You never know, Mark. You never know if there's some piece of data that individual has got their eyes open to. You don't know what school they're in, and maybe there's a sentence of data that they're supposed to get that suddenly clears, and you are the host for that. So what I guess I'm trying to get to is that if we can practice this prayer absolute, for me, the prayer absolute is a door opener. And it opens the door, and we go through the door. And then when we go about our world, I know that after this class, I'm going to get up. I know what's going to happen. I'm going to go outside. I'll go to my car. A friend of mine and I are going to go down to the store. And yet my eyes will be open the entire time, and I'll see certain people to avoid and certain people to approach. Plus, when they see us together, they are energized. Is that right? They're energized. They see something unique and different. And it allows them to open up in a different way. Thank you, Susan.
Simon says, yes, Mark. But both parties had a different reason to have accessibility to each other. Theirs was a different access to you because you were vulnerable. Yours was from a mood of consciousness.
Yeah, we don't know where the other person was at. You're right. But it just happened to come together at that time, which is interesting in itself, actually.
Jim H says, he says, okay, not faith if you are indifferent to outcome.
Yeah, that's an experimental outlook.
Yeah. This material, I don't care in what manner you study it, whether you have an emotional response, a physical response, a mental response. Unless you own the data, you own this experimentally, in a certain way it's meaningless. And that's what I've been pushing for during these classes for all these years now is, yes, there's a lot of theorem behind it, and that that helps us too, but that's not their goal. Our goal is to develop the cyclic modality within us to experience the things that are laid out for us in the prayer absolute. This written prayer is a roadmap, and the roadmap can be followed in many ways. For me, I follow it through a sensing mechanism, and I'm happy to discuss it forever, what I mean by that, but I also want to know what you mean by it, if you mean anything. And that's where we wound up in this class a lot, I think, more than we normally would. But I'm okay with that.
Well, I think we've touched on something very important tonight, David, and maybe you said most of us are fairly aware of this, but I think it's worth mentioning. You know, it reminded me that I had this interesting experience some years ago of visiting a group in Italy, you know, a spiritual group from a different school, you know, or a different approach anyway, different practice. But these were people who were in touch with EJ Gold and with our institute through Claudio Naranjo. You know, they were associated with Claudio Naranjo. And I had this wonderful Italian dinner. They gathered all these people, and I was like a guest of honor. And they had talked about a lot of things actually that night. It was quite interesting. But they had taken on as an obligation, I guess somebody in their organization had suggested that they do practical work on self. You know, the Big 24, which they took from EJ, and they were working on it. I believe they had it. They were either translating it into Italian, or most of them understood enough English, and so on. And so their understanding was they were going to meet as a group, like a study group, and they were going to go over each chapter 1 week, and then come back the next week like you did online, and compare experiences. Like, this is the data. When I did this exercise, this is what I did. So I asked them about this, or they, you know, I wanted to know what their progress was, or how they felt about practical work on self. And they said that this group had failed, that it had bogged down, because what they did was when they read the chapter and discussed the exercise, then they couldn't agree among themselves how to do the exercise. And so they would come back the next week and they would still kind of, they would say, well, I thought I would try doing it this way and I would try doing it this way. And they, so what they actually did was they were too intellectual about the whole thing.
Right.
And, you know, without meaning to insult anybody, a lot of Europeans tend to be this way. And they actually needed, unfortunately, what they needed was a more experienced study circle leader, because if I had been there, I told them, you know, I'm sorry, you guys, but this is, you know, if you had EJ here to give you the real dope, what he would tell you is, yeah, you have a discussion, 1 hour, just set yourself 1 hour, or an hour and a half, or whatever, and discuss how you think the exercise should be done. Then everybody should go and do it however they understand that it should be done, and however they personally, subjectively understand it, and then come back and compare notes. And that's the idea is not for there to be a philosophical agreement before doing the practice. So basically everything that we do in this teaching is based on this principle, which is you do the practice and then you have the experience, you have the sensation, you do something to change your vibration, to change
right.
your state, and you do something. And then, you know, do we do it in a cave? You know, is it 20 years of solitary confinement? No, the point is, with the study circle work, you come back to the study circle and you say, oh, well, when I tried doing the doorways exercise, this is what I experienced. And then everybody, and I mean, you know, unfortunately, this is actually something in real life that happened with this group, is that they bogged down on the necessity to interpret and understand somehow philosophically or psychologically or something what the exercise was.
Right.
Before they ever did it. So anyway, practice. How do you get to Carnegie Hall? The story goes, is you have to practice.
Yeah. Oh,
practice, and more practice.
I have something to read, but it'll just take about 1 minute. But is there anything else, Susan?
There's one more comment from Mark Roach. Who says, a nice definition of faith is willingness to follow truth wherever it leads.
Okay. That's partly what we're talking about. This quote I'm going to read might be of interest. I don't know if Silverdale's still on. But this is from Canto 1 of the Paradiso.
Oh, okay.
Dante's Paradiso. Okay. And it's just, I think it's it starts at line 64. This was written in the 13th century, by the way.
Something like that, yeah.
So I'll begin. I don't need to give any background, do I?
I don't think so. There's Dante calling in now, but
Dante's calling in now, but forget it. The eyes of Beatrice were all intent on the eternal circles from the sun. I turned aside. I set my eyes on her. In watching her, within me I was changed, as Glaucus changed, tasting the herb that made him a companion of the other sea gods. Passing beyond the human cannot be worded. Let Glaucus serve as simile. Until grace grant you the experience. So only when grace grants you the experience can we begin to know this. And I'll give a little bit of background. So when Dante finally enters Paradiso, the highest chambers, There are no words. I mean, the angels, Beatrice was hesitant to even bring him in because he was so human. But that was part of her job, was to bring him in, and she did. And he started to change. As he saw the vision that she was experiencing, he was changed. And then he noted that from that only when grace descends upon you are you then so changed. Can you then understand it? So part of what our job is to allow grace to come through and to descend upon us. That's the beginning of the invocation. That's the beginning of the invocation. And we can do it together, and sometimes we can do it by ourselves. Time in grade is what Ivan was telling us earlier. Let's spend more time in this grade. Because as we do that, there's so much we can take forward. So much we can take forward. And then we bring it back here and it's renewed, and you actually wind up sharing it with each other. It's an interesting thing.
Yeah, this is you like are a study circle.
Actually, energetically, sharing this one to another, whether you speak or don't speak. So remember Dante's words, and go out and so be experienced.
That's one of the more long running attempts to. To capture and communicate waking states and so on is in poetry and mystical poetry.
Yeah.
Dante is certainly in there. Should we show people the image?
Yeah.
Some of you may have never seen this man on the cross image done by Tom X, the painter Tom X. And this is one of the images. There's more than one. But this is the type of image that EJ's referring to in this chapter as an object of contemplation. Let's see if this works.
Can we unwrap it? Here, Ivan. No, you just hold it a little bit closer. Hang on. There you go. That's good.
So this is the...
Look what you're doing. Bend it. Right there. And then up a little bit. So that's one of the images of the man on the cross that was depicted. There have been a number of attempts at drawing this, and this is one that's been very dear to many of us, once again by Tom X.
He said that EJ envisioned this. He described it to Tommy.
EJ... Tommy was, a consummate painter, and EJ asked Tommy to depict what EJ described. And EJ described this, and this is the exact example of it. Good.
Can you define it, sort of?
What do you mean?
Well, we have two beings. Two invocations. If I come to focus my attention on this image, how do I know where to focus my energy?
Well, what do you see, Susan?
I see the man on the cross being cradled by an angel.
Ah.
So even in the suffering, there's still the support. I see both the anguish and the...
He is crucified. There are nails through his hands.
I don't know if you can see the nails.
Crucified to the angel.
But he's definitely crucified to the angel.
Hmm.
But nevertheless, this individual is crucified. So that's an important element.
Aren't we all? Sorry.
Well, are we?
Yes.
And if we can stand in that for a moment, then you begin to invoke. You can actually stand in there. What is it that Christ said on the cross? Remember? Father. Remember our Bible? Forgive me. No, what did he do? What else did he say? Why have you forsaken me, Father? Because he was in horrible pain, but in the height of that crucifixion, at that moment, he was forsaken, and only by being forsaken, only by being in that moment of being forsaken, can you invoke the help. You don't get the help first, and then you go, okay, I'll try it. Do we know if this image is available? We'll have that answer for next class.
And if there's time, I guess Mark Roach was asking if you could read Dante's words again.
Yeah, I can, and there is time. And
yeah, that's nice.
It's very, Dante was quite a technician, too.
Now, if one does not have this image, like me, and were to do an exercise, can't I just focus without the actual image?
If I was you, I would take the image, the hint of the image, to heart, and
right.
Just say, okay, can I stand in the place of my own crucifixion? Can I stand in that moment of my being on the cross? And if you can stand there, yes, it's not pleasant at all, believe me, but then something else gets invoked.
Susan,
that helps, thank you.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, I don't know if this works for you. My current outlook is that the absolute is, the way that EJ is describing it, the absolute is crucified to this creation.
Wow.
On to this creation. So for me, like when I look out of my slider on the second floor and look into the trees and the sky and the surrounding foothills and so on, so what I try to put myself into this frame of mind is that this is that I'm looking at. Everything that I'm looking at is what the absolute is crucified to, including myself as the receiver. But in other words, that's where I'm asking myself to go to that contemplation.
And I think
that any landscape, any scene of this world that you're looking at is appropriate.
That.
Yeah, is that.
Right.
So once again, and Mark, you can find this online easily too. This is Canto 1 of Paradiso. The eyes of Beatrice were all intent on the eternal circles from the sun. I turned aside. I set my eyes on her. In watching her within me, I was changed. As Glaucus changed, tasting the herb that made him a companion of the other sea gods. Now, passing beyond the human cannot be worded. Let Glaucus serve as simile. Until grace grants you the experience.
Yeah, that's a good phrase, passing beyond the human. That's a tough one.
Yeah, and so we don't have human words for that. And as I've said before, that when Dante was allowed into the higher chambers, there's 10 levels of heaven. When he was in the higher chambers, the angels laughed at him, saying, who are you? You can't even come close to us. You don't even know what we're talking about. And then, but however, they would devolve to share with him because the data was important to pass on. And at the eve at the very end, at the Godhead, he was just shown nothing but a single rose. So there we are. Let grace then descend. And we'll see how we do with that. And next week we'll move on.
Speaking of descending.
We'll never move on. We're always in the same place. And that's okay sometimes too. So we'll see you next week, Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock. Thanks a lot for showing up tonight. Take care.
Good night, all.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks, Susan.
You're welcome.